This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area Thursday, October 11th, 2012. Democrats at the State House say they're fed up with Republican Secretary of State Scott Gessler's partisan games. Two lawmakers plan to introduce legislation next session to try and rein him in. As Bent of Brooklyn reports, this is just one of several controversies surrounding the high-profile official.
Republican Secretary of State Scott Gessler has been a lightning rod since taking office, and Democrats say they're sick of his, quote, shenanigans. Democratic Representatives Claire Levy and Chrisanta Duran announced proposed legislation at the Capitol on Wednesday. They both say Gessler routinely oversteps his authority. Levy says she wants to make it tougher for him to issue guidelines to county clerks and force him to rely more on formal rulemakings.
What we're concerned about is the process. Informal guidances are just things that the secretary can sit down in his office and write someday and issue to the clerks. The effect that we're concerned about is the result is going to be intimidation of voters.
Levy opposes a recent guideline that gives election poll watchers more authority to verify mail-in ballots and voters at the booth.
If Secretary Gessler is going to try to change the rules this late in the game, he should do it through the public rulemaking process, not behind closed doors.
But Gessler says he's done nothing wrong and is simply trying to prevent voter fraud.
In my view, you want to make it easy to vote and tough to cheat.
Democrats have also blasted Gessler for sending letters to check the citizenship of some registered voters. They say he's trying to suppress voter turnout for partisan reasons. Not true, says Gessler. He notes that his office just wrapped up the largest voter registration initiative in state history.
Colorado is doing a better job than ever before in registering people to vote. I mean, I think the data shows that it's been, frankly, a spectacular success.
Colorado spent $1 million, most of it federal money, to run ads telling people how to register to vote and sending letters to eligible voters. According to Gessler's office, after Tuesday's deadline, about 3.6 million people are now registered to vote. That's a 10% jump from the last presidential election. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
About 1,800 enthusiastic supporters turned out at the Fountain Middle School Gymnasium in Colorado Springs yesterday as First Lady Michelle Obama kicked off a two-day campaign swing through Colorado in support of the president. From KRCC in Colorado Springs, Andrea Chalfin has this report.
Mrs. Obama touted her husband's character and listed health care reform and ending the Iraq War as among President Barack Obama's accomplishments. The First Lady also said economic recovery takes time and the alternative in this election is to go backwards.
And yes, while we still have a long way to go to rebuild our economy, there are many signs that we are headed in the right direction.
Mrs. Obama is also scheduled to visit Durango and Castle Rock. Republican candidate Mitt Romney's wife, Ann, visited Littleton last week. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Andrea Chalfin.
As of yesterday afternoon, the Goblin Fire in the San Juan National Forest north of Durango is now estimated at 350 acres. Four U.S. Forest Service firefighters are actively holding the bottom portion of the fire away from the river and keeping the railroad clear. The railroad also has seven firefighters on standby if needed. Otherwise, train operations are normal and on schedule, with each train followed by a water car. According to fire officials, train passengers report exciting views of the fire, which measures about 1 mile in width across the north slope of the canyon, 2 miles south of Needleton. A burnout operation on Tuesday to stop the fire spread was successful, and firefighters were able to extinguish a spot fire across the river yesterday. The fire's growth has been upslope some 2,000 feet into the West Needles portion of the Weminuche Wilderness. Farther upslope is an area burned during a 2002 wildfire, and which is expected to act as a fire break. In addition, moisture is forecast for the area within the next 24 hours. The Goblin Fire is being managed under a containment strategy to keep the fire within predetermined boundaries while mitigating risk to firefighters. Containment is being attained through burnout operations and building a fire line where feasible and safe. No structures are currently threatened. The fire is believed to have been started by the Durango and Silverton Narrow Gauge Railroad last weekend. High wind and low humidity are feeding fires in several parts of Colorado this week, including a blaze of more than 300 acres in Rocky Mountain National Park. The Denver Post reports that according to Larimer County emergency officials, the fire is burning less than a half mile from the area known locally as the Pool, about 2 miles west of the Fern Lake Trailhead in Moraine Park. Several campgrounds and trails have been closed. There have been no evacuations in or near Estes Park, despite smoke in the area. The Post reports that the cause of the fire, which started Tuesday, is under investigation. Fire officials continue to ask the public to be careful with campfires. Energy Fuels is starting to get its two new uranium mines in southern Utah permitted and ready to open. The Telluride Daily Planet reports that as of October 2nd, the Canadian company planning to build the Pinyon Ridge uranium mill in the Paradox Valley now owns the Sage Plain properties. The property, which contains the Plain and the Callahan mines, is located 15 miles northwest of Monticello, Utah. According to the Planet, the deal struck with Energy Fuels' former partner, Australian-based Aldershot Resources, also includes some uranium mines and properties in Arizona. Energy Fuels spokesperson Curtis Moore told the Planet the company hopes construction on the two mines can begin after the permitting process is complete. Permitting with the state of Utah is expected to take around 12 to 18 months. The Planet reports that the two underground mines are expected to contain around 2.83 million pounds of uranium and 17.83 million pounds of vanadium. Both mines need infrastructure improvements before they can start operating. The Planet also reports that some concerns linger about the mine's impact and condition. Sarah Fields of Moab-based Uranium Watch says the mines have never been properly reclaimed, and reopening them could create issues with surrounding property owners. This summer, Energy Fuels bought a number of the other uranium mines in Utah through acquisition of all Denison Mines' U.S. operations. The acquisition also included the White Mesa Mill in Blanding, Utah. In a related story, just days before a new hearing process starts on the Pinyon Ridge uranium license, the town of Telluride and San Miguel County have decided to stop fighting Energy Fuels' efforts to acquire a radioactive material license. The Watch reports that the parties entered into a settlement agreement with Energy Fuels, which acknowledges the desire of all parties to, quote, avoid the possibility of expensive and protracted litigation. It also lets Energy Fuels move forward with the licensing and commissioning of the Pinyon Ridge facility, while purportedly, quote, maintaining and protecting the rights and interests of the Telluride and the county, including the health, safety, and welfare of the residents of and visitors to San Miguel County, end quote. Yesterday, Energy Fuels spokesman Curtis Moore told the Watch that there were still a couple of points that need to be resolved in the settlement agreement, but that he is confident it will happen. The Watch reports that San Miguel County Commissioner Art Goodtimes hailed the settlement agreement as a compromise solution that protects the county from blowing dust, radionuclide deposition, and water quality damage, while still allowing a potentially job-creating industry to establish itself in the area. In June, a district judge ruled that the initial issuance of the radioactive materials license was unlawful because a formal adjudicatory hearing was not properly provided and ordered a new process to be held. The new hearing is scheduled to start on Monday. Public comment will be received in NUCLA on November 7th. The Watch reports that under the terms of the settlement agreement, Telluride and San Miguel County may choose to attend or not attend any and all aspects of the upcoming scheduled public hearing, but will not actively participate in the evidence-gathering part of the proceeding. The campaign favoring Amendment 64 announced Tuesday that more than 300 doctors statewide, including more than two dozen on the Western Slope, have endorsed the ballot question to legalize marijuana. Some of the practicing physicians said while they've seen numerous injuries and accidents because of abuse of alcohol, they rarely see such things with marijuana. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports Dr. Bruce Madison, former associate medical director at the University of Colorado School of Medicine, said it makes sense for that reason and others to approve the ballot question, which calls for regulating marijuana similar to how alcohol is controlled. Said Madison, "As physicians, we have a professional obligation to do no harm. But the truth is that Colorado marijuana laws do just that by wasting hundreds of millions of dollars in a failed war on marijuana by ruining thousands of lives by unnecessary arrest and incarceration, and by causing the deaths of hundreds of people killed in black market criminal activities." Betty Aldworth, advocacy director of the Campaign to Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol, said the doctors have joined a growing list of professionals from all walks of life in support of the idea. Last week, a group of Republicans came out in support of the measure, including former Congressman Tom Tancredo. Tancredo said it is possible to disagree with using marijuana, but still agree that it shouldn't be illegal. He questioned why all Republicans who believe in limited government and personal responsibility aren't also endorsing the measure. In response to that, yesterday a large group of law enforcement officials came out against it. The Sentinel reports those law enforcement officials, including Mesa County Sheriff Stan Hilke, said that legalizing marijuana as Amendment 64 would do could cause far more problems than it's worth. Quote, "Anytime you normalize behavior, it's going to happen more often," Hilke said. If it's occurring more often, there's going to be more people using it, and the more people who use it, a percentage of them are not going to use it responsibly. Proponents of the measure, which is designed to regulate marijuana the same way alcohol is controlled, say legalizing it would reduce crime and reduce people's access to other harder drugs. But Hilke said the evidence indicates the opposite happens. Said Hilke, "The people that are in prison, there's less than 1% who are there on a marijuana charge, and that marijuana charge is a big marijuana charge." Mason Tvert, head of the effort to get the measure passed by voters on November 6th, said not all law enforcement officials agree. Last month, the National Latino Officers Association and Blacks in Law Enforcement of America endorsed the measure, along with a number of individual police officers, judges, and prosecutors. Lauren Davis, former senior deputy district attorney in Denver, said Wednesday's opposition of the measure by a coalition of sheriffs, police chiefs, and district attorneys will only serve criminals. Quote, "The goal of Amendment 64 is to eliminate the underground market by having marijuana sales conducted by taxed and regulated Colorado businesses," Davis said. "By opposing this measure, these law enforcement officials are fighting to keep marijuana sales in the hands of gangs and cartels," end quote. The measure calls for liquor store-like stores to open to sell the weed, but only in jurisdictions that approve them. The measure also calls for a portion of tax money collected from those sales to go toward school construction. With 4 weeks remaining until prep football playoff season begins, the battle for first place in the 1A Western Slope League is likely to come down to the three Delta County teams. KVNF's Tammy Meck has this report.
With a 5-1 record, Cedar Edge remains undefeated and is currently in first place in the WSL. The Bruins are averaging more than 320 yards rushing and 71 yards passing per game. This is homecoming week at Cedar Edge High School, and the Bruins host Meeker on Friday at 7. Hotchkiss is now 1-1 in league play and in third place following a 55-20 routing of Lake County last Friday at Leadville. They host Roaring Fork tomorrow night at 7, then start preparing for the annual game against Paonia on October 19th. With a 2-0 record, the Eagles are ranked second in the WSL. They squeaked by Meeker with a 21-20 win last Friday. Place kicker Jorge Quiñones, who also plays soccer for the Delta Panthers, played his second game of the season and of his career at Meeker. Quiñones kicked two first-half field goals, including a 44-yarder. Will Austin ran for two touchdowns and a two-point conversion. Paonia hosts Lake County on Friday with an early kickoff scheduled for 6 p.m. at Paonia Town Park. Delta hosts Battle Mountain at 7 p.m. Friday as part of the Panthers' Homecoming Week celebration. Montrose opens league competition at Fruita Monument this Friday at 7. Norwood and Dove Creek are both undefeated and in a tie for first place in the 8-man Western Division. Dove Creek plays Friday at Nucla, and Norwood will be at Mancos. Norwood and Dove Creek will face off for the final scheduled game of the season on October 19th. This Saturday morning, cross-country runners will gather for the annual Montrose Relays. The relays pit two-person teams, which can be same-gender or co-ed, in a relay where competitors take turns running a mile until both runners have completed 3 miles. For most runners, the race is as much for fun as it is for competition, and many of the participants come in costume. Things will get a little more serious next Wednesday when teams from across the Western Slope compete at the regional races at Confluence Park and Delta. These 5,000-meter races determine whether or not teams and individuals will run at state on October 27th. Delta senior Clarissa Whiting is ranked first in 4A Region 6 competition, and twin sister Cleo is ranked fourth. On the boys' team, we could see some strong performances from Dustin Ombe and Jonathan Kindernecht, who were both ranked in the top 15. In 2A Region 4 competition, the Hotchkiss boys and girls teams are ranked first. The Paonia girls are ranked second in the region. Between the Paonia and Hotchkiss girls teams, they have 10 of the top 15 runners in the region. Crested Butte Community School's Amber Scott is ranked first, and Rachel Hampton of Telluride is ranked second. Natalie Anderson of Hotchkiss is ranked third. Races will start at 1:30, beginning with the 2A boys race, followed by the 2A girls. 4A races should begin at about 3:30. And in volleyball, the communities of Paonia and Hotchkiss joined forces on October 2nd to celebrate Pink Night, a fundraiser in honor of October as Breast Cancer Awareness Month. This was the fourth year the event was held, and the fourth year to benefit Delta County Hospice and Palliative Care. Dozens of businesses and individuals from both towns contributed to the event, which included contests, a money grab, lots of prizes, and, of course, volleyball. While the Lady Eagles varsity team defeated Hotchkiss in 3 sets, the big winner of the evening was Hospice, which will receive $3,262. For KVNF News, I'm Tammy Mack with your weekly sports report.
This concludes the morning newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria.